Welcome to Dead Souls Social Club.
This audio presentation contains graphic details of death, violence, and controversial subject matter. Listener discretion is strongly advised. From Dead Souls Media, this is The Disappearance of Brenda Heist. I'm Jamie Black, a researcher and psychologist, and I'll be your host for tonight. On Friday, February the 8th, 2002, two young children, 8-year-old Morgan Heist and 12-year-old Lee Heist Jr., came home from school to an empty house. All the lights were switched off. The kitchen sink was full of dishes from that morning. There was laundry folded neatly into piles. There were pork chops thawing out on the tabletop for dinner. But their mother, 42-year-old Brenda Heist, was nowhere to be found. That morning, when Brenda dropped the two children off at school, like she did every day, she mentioned that she may be at the supermarket when they got home. So the kids weren't worried. They hung up their school bags and just switched on the television. But after about 30 minutes or so, at 3:10 p.m., Morgan decided to call her dad, Lee Sr. He was at work, and Morgan wanted to tell him that their mother still wasn't home, which wasn't like her at all. Lee Sr. told him not to worry. She would be home in no time. She had never done this before, he thought, but it wasn't concerning. I'm sure she just had an urgent errand to run. Lee Sr. told Morgan, not to worry, she'll be home soon. But another hour passed, and still Brenda had not come home. So the kids called their dad at work once again. And much like before, he said, don't worry about it, give her a little more time. She's probably held up at the shops for some reason. Lee Sr. was quietly thinking to himself that this was really out of character for Brenda, but he didn't say this to the children. Then another hour passed, and at 4:50 p.m., the children called their father for the third time. They told him that she still wasn't home, and they hadn't heard anything from her. By this time, both children were upset and really worried. Lee Sr. could hear it in their voices. Their dad tells them to give her another 20 more minutes and to call him back if she's not home by then. So, 20 minutes comes and goes, and when Lee Jr. called his father at 5:10 p.m. to say that she still is not home, their dad finally leaves his office and rushes home. He calmly tells the children that he'll head back now and that he'll see them soon. But whilst ensuring that he comes across as cool and calm to the children, inside he was beginning to get really worried. Now, Lee Sr.'s office is located about an hour away from the family home, so it takes him a little while to get there. Their home is in Lititz, Pennsylvania, and he works in Philadelphia. So it was a difficult drive for him, with multiple different scenarios playing over and over in his mind. Where could she be? How could she leave the damn kids like this? This was completely out of character for her. When Lee Sr. got home, a little after 6 p.m, Brenda still wasn't there, and both of his children were in floods of tears with panic. He tended to the kids, consoled them, and tried to calm them down, even though his stomach was turning butterflies. He calmed them down, checked the house over to see if there was any indication of where she might be, and finally, at around 8 p.m, Lee Sr. called the police. The police arrived within 20 minutes, and it's clear to them that Brenda was gone and the family was deeply concerned. Her car was also gone, but the house was fine. There was no sign of a break-in or struggle, but the police issued a BOLO, a be on the lookout alert, as they call it in the United States. But the police didn't consider her a missing person just yet. It's 2002, so Brenda has no mobile phone. Whilst they were available and growing in popularity at the time, they were nowhere near as commonplace as smartphones are today, so it wasn't unusual for someone to not have one. Brenda was born in March 1959 and grew up all over the place, quite literally. Her dad was in the Air Force, so they lived in Germany, Texas, Italy, South Carolina, the UK, Missouri, and Idaho. She was one of six children and the only girl, so she had five very boisterous brothers. The entire family was really close and remained that way right through adulthood. The family would be hugely impacted by the news of her disappearance. Brenda worked full-time as a bookkeeper for a car dealership, but she was also very involved in her children's lives and their extracurricular activities. She was her daughter's basketball coach and the homeroom mother in her daughter's elementary school class. 2 days before her disappearance, Brenda was speaking with her mother and telling her how excited she was that Morgan, her daughter, had scored in a recent basketball game. She added that she was really holding her own on the co-ed team and showing the boys who was boss. Her mother likened it to how much Brenda had to do the very same with her five brothers when she was younger. Like mother, like daughter. Brenda and Lee Sr. got married on July 8, 1983. And in 1989, they had their first child, their son Lee Heist IV. And in 1993, their daughter Morgan came along. But sadly, by the early 2000s, Lee Sr. and Brenda's marriage was falling apart. They're having a lot of money problems due to Lee's irresponsible spending. And even though Lee was 14 years older than Brenda, she commented to friends that she was sick of his immaturity and had begun growing apart from him. Thus, just weeks before the children came home to that empty house, Brenda filed for divorce. It was done entirely amicably, however, and there was no bad blood between Brenda and Lee Sr. They had only just told the children about the divorce around a week prior. Lee Sr. really did not want the divorce, but he agreed to it, seeing that Brenda was no longer happy. Brenda would get custody of the children, and she and them would move somewhere nearby so Lee could see the kids whenever he wanted. That was the agreement they made. She gets the kids, which is what was most important to her, and Lee could keep the house. The day after her disappearance, she dropped the kids off at school and took the day off work so she could head out to look for housing for her and the children. She would have to rent for the foreseeable future. Police talked to neighbours, and they said that they saw Brenda come back home from taking the kids to school at around 8:30 a.m. Lee Sr. also told the police that he had called Brenda from work that day just before lunch, and they talked for a little while, and everything seemed fine. Brenda seemed fine. A few days go by, and law enforcement rescind the BOLO. She's now officially considered a missing person. Detective John Schofield is assigned as the lead investigator, and first he questions Brenda's estranged husband, Lee Sr. Lee immediately denied having anything to do with her disappearance. He said that he hadn't wanted the divorce, but he knew that it was for the best. And so far, it had been really amicable, and they had remained close. Plus, he had been at work all day, which his employer and co-workers could confirm. He didn't leave the office until he came home. But that does not mean that he didn't have any involvement, the detective thought. He also seemed very keen to clear his name right away. Lee Sr. is considered the main suspect at this point. Meanwhile, law enforcement are scouting the area, looking for any clues as to where she could be. Finally, 4 days after her disappearance, the police get a huge break. Brenda's car is found parked on the street in York, Pennsylvania. York is around 30 miles or 45 minutes away from the family home. The keys to the car were gone, but the car was okay. Nothing seemed really amiss, and there was no indication of foul play. The car was parked just 2 blocks away from the bus station. And since there was really no sign of anything untoward, the detectives explored the possibility that she may have run away. Although this theory was really short-lived. Literally everyone in her life, her friends, family, co-workers, Everyone said that she would never ever leave her children like this. Her children were her whole world. That was the consensus amongst everyone who the police asked. Lee Sr. even referred to her as, quote, Beaver Cleaver's mother. For reference to those living outside of the United States, Beaver Cleaver refers to an American television show from the late 1950s called Leave It to Beaver, which was about an archetypical suburban American family from the 50s. It's saccharine, sentimental, and somewhat mawkish. Everything you would expect it to be, really. Brenda loved being a mother, though. Her children were literally everything to her. Neighbors said that she was always in the front yard playing with them. She was heavily involved in their school life, in their social life, and incredibly protective, loving, and present. Additionally, Brenda hadn't taken anything with her either. No clothes, no makeup, no money. She didn't even have a handbag. Nothing. In fact, friends and family said that she would have taken more things even if she had popped to the grocery store. Her family also commented that the makeup being left behind is the biggest sign that she did not voluntarily walk away. Brenda was a glamorous and pretty lady. She cared deeply about her appearance. They said Brenda put a lot of time and effort into always looking her best and would never leave behind her makeup, especially her eyebrow pencil. But also her nice, expensive clothing and jewelry. She coveted these things. Brenda had a condition where she wasn't able to grow facial hair, so she had to draw on her eyebrows. Thus, she did not leave the house without doing that first. She was very self-conscious about it. One time, her and the children slept late for school after a vacation, so they were in a rush. Brenda didn't have chance to apply her eyebrow pencil, and as a result, she refused to get out of the car or let anyone see her when she arrived at the kids' school. Further, she also hadn't withdrawn any money or taken her purse containing what little cash she had on her that day. It was of particular note that she didn't even have enough money to buy a cup of coffee with her. But still, the authorities looked into all planes, trains, and bus reservations made in the area. It was important to be thorough. These all needed ID to book, and Brenda hadn't made any reservations or boarded any such transportation. The police also reviewed the CCTV footage from the bus station, the airport, and the two nearest train stations. Again, just to double check that she hadn't left under a new identity, which was unlikely anyway, given her lawful and honest nature. Police found no trace of her boarding any of these transport types. They monitored the bookings for more than a month after her disappearance too. There was nothing. So they ruled out voluntary disappearance almost right away. More and more of the signs pointed to foul play being the cause of her vanishing. Eventually, days turned into weeks, and weeks turned into months, and the authorities find nothing. No leads, no evidence, no information. There is no trace of Brenda Heist, alive or dead. It's like she had vanished into thin air. Investigators confiscated the family computer to see if there was anything there that hinted at anything in particular. If she had been communicating with anyone. If she had booked or arranged anything online, transport-wise. But they couldn't find a single thing. In fact, Brenda's online footprint was very minimal. She hardly used the internet. Again, it was 2002, so this was still in its infancy, I suppose. They also went through her phone records from her home, her office, and friends' phone records in extreme detail. But once again, nothing. Brenda never had a mobile phone. The police added her to the National Crime Information Center for Missing Persons database. They also started monitoring her social security number and set up alerts with the United States Social Security Administration so that if anyone tried to use it to apply for credit cards, open bank accounts, or try to obtain work, then the police would be immediately notified. There was never any activity on it. They looked into whether she was secretly seeing someone, but there was nothing. Her life was an open book to her friends and family. Eventually, the case goes cold. Law enforcement simply run out of leads and options. Lee Sr. remains the lead suspect and is followed and monitored by the police for more than a year. They have no evidence against him, but they think he will slip up if he is the person responsible for her disappearance. Lee Sr. ends up quitting his job to take care of his children full time and to help them grieve. Since his office was an hour away, he normally left home at 6 a.m. and didn't often get home until 6 or 7 p.m. That schedule couldn't work as a single parent anymore. So he didn't really have a choice. He had to resign. He considered moving closer to his work, but he didn't want to uproot the children who were already dealing with huge change in their lives. After a while though, roughly 6 to 8 months, Lee Sr. was ready to get back to work. He needed to. So he started looking for a new job. But he had a lot of trouble finding anything. And it was not for lack of trying or options. But since he was very much suspected of having some sort of involvement in Brenda's disappearance, people looked at him with suspicion, and no one wanted to hire him. Most of the community believed he was responsible for Brenda's disappearance, and neighbors stopped talking to him and ostracized the family. Other parents wouldn't let their kids go over to his house or let their children bother with the heist kids. People just distanced themselves from the family, and the family really felt it too. It was a horrific and humbling time for them. The children lost most of their friends and faced bullying in school, with kids repeatedly telling them that their dad had murdered their mother. It has now been a year since Brenda went missing, and the house was facing foreclosure. As Lee Sr. hadn't worked for so long, his finances were beginning to dry up, and he was struggling to pay debts and bills. So Lee Sr. decided to sell the house. Him and the children moved to a nearby town called Denver, Pennsylvania. It's a small town in Lancaster County, about 12 miles away from where they previously lived in Lititz. The kids had to enroll in a new school, and Lee Sr. continued looking for work close to their new home. In the meantime, their church helped them with money for bills and food. Lee Sr. also started giving Brenda's things away to charity and selling some of her more valuable items in order to make a little money. He was aware how this looked to others. He was trying to move on with his life, however, and accepted that sooner or later, the police would likely find Brenda's body. Although Lee Sr. continued to ask police for updates on the investigation on a weekly basis, and he does this for years. 8 years, in fact. Brenda's brother Bill, who lives in Texas, said that he spent months watching his caller ID, hoping that she would call. He would study all the numbers that called his house and mobile phone, hoping to see one from Pennsylvania. He said that one day, he finally did, and he gasped. His heart almost stopped, he commented. All he could say was, quote, "Holy shit." Bill gathered his emotions and called the number back as quickly as possible. He was disheartened, however, to see that the number turned out to be a credit card company trying to make a sale, a telemarketer. He was so upset. This brought all of his emotions flooding back once again. Brenda's parents said similar things after she disappeared. They didn't leave the house for weeks, hoping Brenda would just show up on their doorstep or call the house. But sadly, that never happened. Her mother, Jean, said, quote,
"You hear of other missing women being found, and you wonder if someday you'll get that call. Maybe the reason she is gone is so horrible that we're not supposed to know."
This is kind of a bleak perspective. But she added, quote,
"I know that whoever did it will pay. I'm a firm believer that there will be justice when they pass on from this world."
In the 2 years following Brenda's disappearance, two other mothers from the same area as Brenda also went missing. Marianne Bagenstos and Courtney Fry. In both of their cases, the husband, or boyfriend, were both charged with their murder. Understandably, this only turned up and intensified the suspicion on Lee Sr. It also didn't help that they were going through a divorce when she vanished. All eyes remained on him. Brenda's case continued to see no movement, and it went on that way for years. At the same time that those other two women went missing, the Lacey Peterson case was playing out in California. You might remember that she was the mother-to-be who was murdered by her husband, Scott. It made international headlines and spawned a Netflix docuseries. This only turned up the media coverage of Brenda's case too. In 2004, Lee Sr. finalized his and Brenda's divorce, but he stayed in touch with investigators, asking for regular updates and to see if he was still a suspect, which they continuously said to him that they were not ruling him out. Of course, him regularly asking if he was a suspect raised further suspicion with police. If he was innocent, then he really couldn't catch a break. Police announced a $5,000 reward for information as to what happened to Brenda, and Detective Schofield asked the Lancaster County Major Crimes Unit to help investigate. They tracked down every single lead, which was a lot. People called saying that she was buried in some nearby woods. Some people called saying that they had seen her in a shopping mall or a restaurant or on the street. Every single claim was investigated and ruled out. More than 1,000 of them. Every crank, psychic, mistaken identity, and curiosity seeker. The lead investigator said to CNN, quote,
"I won't even get into the number of psychics that called saying that they knew where her body was buried."
But nothing ever panned out. And at one point, law enforcement got a possible DNA match from a baseball hat that was dropped at a crime scene in New York. But further analysis and testing showed that it wasn't Brenda's DNA after all. It belonged to some teenager who was completely unrelated. Detective Schofield stayed on her case, however. The file never left his desk, and he kept her missing person poster hanging on his office wall. He told a reporter from the Lancaster New Era newspaper that, quote,
"Every detective has that one unsolved case that they keep closest to them. Mine is the missing persons case of Brenda Heist."
Over time, Detective Schofield became very close with Lee Sr. and the kids. It was said that he was like their godfather, especially towards Morgan. She took the loss of her mother the hardest because she was the youngest. Her mother, she said, was her best friend. She really struggled. Her mother was her homeroom mother, her basketball coach, and the closest of her parents. She was with her almost 24/7. She said that her mother was her whole world. Then, in 2009, almost 8 years after Brenda's disappearance, Lee Sr. finally had her declared legally dead. It was closure for him and the family, an end to an awful period within their lives. He collected a $100,000 life insurance policy that they had taken out on her, and around a year later, he met and remarried to a woman named Cindy. The family had finally moved on. Cindy really clicked with the Heist children, and they became a close and loving family unit. By 2013, the children were all grown up. Morgan, who was 8 when Brenda went missing, was now 19 years old and a sophomore in college. Lee Jr., who was 12 at the time Brenda disappeared, was now 23 years old and attending the police academy in New Jersey. It was his mother's case that made him want to become a law enforcement officer, to hopefully help others who might possibly go through something so devastating as him. Detective Schofield said to the press early on in the case that he was particularly concerned that Lee Jr. would be in his 20s and still asking what happened to his mother. He was taking the loss so hard. And this is exactly what ended up happening. By 2013, it had been 11 years since Brenda vanished, and everyone had accepted the fact that she was dead and they were never going to know what had happened to her. They will likely never even find her body, the family thought. Anything disposed of would have decomposed by now, so they all accept that there was nothing to even find anymore. Then on April the 26th, 2013, Detective Schofield emailed Lee, Morgan, and Lee Jr. and asked if they would all meet him for dinner at a local diner. This wasn't particularly strange or suspicious because they had all become really close with him and they regularly had dinner together. They all agreed and set a time for later that evening. When the two Lees and Morgan got to the diner, Detective Schofield sat down and said abruptly, blurting out, quote,
"We found her."
Then he looked at Morgan and said, quote,
"Your mother is still alive."
Brenda had been missing for 11 years, but she was alive and well, and Detective Schofield had found her. The Heist family were in complete and absolute shock. Then Detective Schofield pulled out a recent photograph of Brenda, and it hits the family like a freight train. They can tell it's Brenda because of her face, but nothing else looks the same, as they had all remembered her, at least. Brenda always put a lot of effort into looking her best, but now she looked, well, very unkempt. Haggard was the word that they used to describe her. Worn down, and she had aged by more than the 11 years that she had been missing. She was very thin, unhealthily so, and her brown hair was now platinum blonde and very unkempt. All the family could say to Detective Schofield was, what the hell had happened to her? As it transpires, and what she told Detective Schofield, was that the day she disappeared, Brenda had taken the day off work to go and look for new housing for her and the children. But that afternoon, she found out that she was denied housing assistance, which she was counting on because she didn't have a lot of income. So feeling very defeated and upset, she went to a local park and was sitting on a bench crying when three homeless people approached her and asked her if she was okay. They got chatting and they told her that they were hitchhiking down to Key West and that she was welcome to join them if she wanted. In a spur of the moment decision, she impulsively said yes. And just like that, she left her entire life and family behind. Something just snapped, she said. She left immediately with these three strangers, taking about a month to get down to South Florida through hitchhiking alone. It was an almost 1,500-mile or 2,400-kilometer journey. And what did she do once she had got down to Florida? Well, once she was there, she spent the first 2 years living on the streets, panhandling and dumpster diving behind restaurants for food. Then she started dating a guy and moved into his camper van for the next 7 years. The whole time, not revealing to anyone what her true identity was. But that relationship turned bad. He became abusive and violent towards her, and they broke up. Following this, she just bounced around South Florida, Hollywood, Tampa, Pensacola, Jacksonville, in fact, all over the state. She was homeless once again. She went by the alias of Kelsey Lovey Smith. Usually just Kelsey Smith, but someone gave her the nickname Lovey, and it stuck. She developed a bit of a criminal record within this time. She had a few arrests for drug possession, drug paraphernalia, and petty theft. She was 42 when she went missing. She was found 11 years later, at the age of 53. The first 2 years, she lived on the streets, as I said, in homeless shelters, under bridges, panhandling, dumpster diving, and begging. When she did find work, it was mostly odd jobs that paid her in cash daily. Most of the time, the work was cleaning houses. That was primarily what she was doing for minimal survival funds. Then in February 2013, Brenda was arrested in Santa Rosa County, near to the border with Alabama. She had been caught using a stolen driver's license at a traffic stop, so she had a car at this point. The driver's license, as it turns out, was stolen from someone who she was cleaning a house for. She served 2 months in jail for this offense. Then, when she was released on April the 18th, 2013, she took a bus to Tarpon Springs near Clearwater and walked a further 15 miles to where she had been living. Then she packed up her 1991 Chevy with all of her belongings and started driving south. On April the 26th, she pulled up to the Murray Nelson Government Center in Key Largo and told a Monroe County deputy that she was on probation under the alias of Kelsey Smith. She wanted to turn herself in because she was a missing person and she was tired of the life. She did not want to be missing anymore. She handed the deputy an expired Pennsylvania driver's license in her original name of Brenda Heist. When he entered the name into the police system, he saw that not only was she missing and had been for 11 years, but she also had a death certificate. The deputy called Detective Schofield in Pennsylvania and told him that they had found Brenda Heist. Initially, Detective Schofield thought the Florida detective meant they had found Brenda's remains. Then he had goosebumps and dropped the phone when the deputy said, "No, no, she's alive, and she's standing in front of me." Detective Schofield asked for a picture, and they took one there and then. He got the first flight down to Key Largo. Detective Schofield would eventually show her family the same photograph. But first, he went down to Key Largo and interviewed Brenda for several hours. She told him her entire story. She said that she snapped from the stress of the divorce and because of her finances, and just abandoned her life. She was very disappointed in herself. She said she thought about her kids every single day, but could not bring herself to call them. Now she was just at the end of her rope, and she was just tired of living as a drifter. Detective Schofield left and flew back to Pennsylvania, and immediately arranged to meet the Heist family at the diner to share with them this insane news. In the meantime, Brenda was put into protective custody, and so her brother, who lived in Gainesville, Florida, came to collect her a few days later with their mother, Jean. During this long overdue reunion, they told her that in the time that she'd been gone, her father and two of her brothers had passed away. So Lee Sr. and the kids are in complete shock. They had already moved on. They had grieved for their lost mother. They had had a funeral and remembrance service for her. Had she lost her mind? Brenda's story makes international headlines within days. Then, in a further twist, and due to the news headlines, a woman named Sondra Forrester, who lived in Pensacola, emerged. Sondra was one of Brenda's clients when she would clean houses down in Florida. Sondra's neighbor had highly recommended Brenda as a housekeeper, or Miss Lovey, as she was now known. So in 2010, Sondra hired her, and the two became close friends. Eventually, Sondra let Brenda move into her home to be a live-in housekeeper and babysitter to her three young children. They loved Miss Lovey. Brenda told Sondra that she was a widow. Her husband, she said, of 20 years, named Lee, she gave her husband's real name, had died a while back, and she never had children. That was her story. She had once had a miscarriage, but no children. While Miss Lovey was taking care of the three Forrester children, she would say things to Sondra, like, quote, "I don't know what I'm doing. I've never had kids. I don't know the first thing about taking care of them. I don't know how you do it. You're so much better than me." The move into Sondra's house was only ever meant to be a temporary arrangement, but it lasted for more than a year. Eventually, Brenda moved out and moved on, and they lost touch. Brenda once again seemed to vanish. As Miss Lovey, she had a Facebook page, but that was deleted the day that she moved out of the Forrester house. She didn't leave on bad terms, she just wanted to move on. Her cell phone was turned off, disconnected in fact, and Sondra wasn't sure where she went. Sondra, the client and friend that she lived with in Pensacola back in 2010, came forward to the media and said that Brenda's story was complete bullshit. She hadn't spent 11 years living on the streets. She said Brenda lived the high life at least for the time that she knew her. Brenda, or Miss Lovey, had coffee every morning by the pool. She was a regular at a beach bar called Peg Leg Pete's in Pensacola Beach. She had a good amount of clients that she was cleaning for, so she had money and a social life. She was living a carefree lifestyle near the beach, and Sondra described it as idyllic, and she didn't seem to have a care in the world. Sondra released pictures of Brenda and Sondra together, out and about during this time, dining, socializing, and shopping for expensive clothes. They even went on vacation together. It does not seem like Brenda was this hopeless, poor homeless woman whose life was in a shambles at all. She's healthy, she's smiling, she's drinking, she's swimming, and she's having fun. But again, Sondra only knew her for a year or two towards the very end of her time in Florida. So leading up to this, Sondra doesn't know how she lived. But she states that when she first met Miss Lovey, she certainly didn't look homeless. In fact, she said, she had money and looked very healthy. We know, or at least we were told, that she lived in a camper van for 7 years prior to this. So again, not homeless. I'll post the photo of Brenda that Detective Schofield gave the Heist family in the diner in the description below. I hope I'm not speaking out of turn when I comment that she looks rough. She does look homeless by this point. But she has just spent time in prison, so keep that in mind too. Sondra Forrester told CNN that she never once suspected that Brenda was using drugs or had a criminal record. If that was the case, she would never have let her live at her house or be around her children. While Brenda was living with Sondra, she grew very close to her children, and she was especially close to Sondra's 12-year-old son. When the news broke about who she really was, Sondra sat him down and told him that Miss Lovey was not who they thought she was. And that's when the son said, quote, "But I love Miss Lovey." And Sondra said, "But that's not even her real name." To which her 12-year-old son replied, quote, "I know. Her real name is Brenda Heist. She told me that." He was probably the only person in her new life that knew who she really was. Maybe she saw her own son in him and trusted him with the information. Or maybe she just wanted to tell someone. Bizarrely though, if you typed Brenda Heist into Google, and this applied even back then a whole wealth of information would come up about her and that she was a missing person. So I guess Sondra's son never did that, never wondered about her background or past or why she had changed her name. He was just 12, I guess. Brenda's mother Jean was elated to find out that her daughter was still alive. When Jean first spoke to Brenda, she assured her that her family still loved her. She accepted what had happened and didn't hold it against Brenda. She understood why she had to do what she did. She was just thankful to have her only daughter back, especially as she had lost her husband and 2 of her 4 sons in the time Brenda had been away. "Everyone would love to see her," Jean said. Lee Sr., Lee Jr., and Megan, however, said not so fast. They were angry. The family had been through so much since Brenda disappeared. Their house faced foreclosure. Lee Sr. had quit his job and struggled to find another for a long time. He was the main suspect in her murder. The community around them abandoned the family. The children went through years of therapy to get over her death. They were bullied at school and isolated amongst their peers. They were angry, but when Sondra's account came out in the press about Brenda's fun and carefree life at the beach, the family were furious. Brenda had not mentioned that part to Detective Schofield. It made them wonder what else she had lied about. Morgan Heist, her daughter, took to Twitter and said that, quote,
"I hope my mother rots in hell for what she has done to our family."
And when she was asked if they would meet with her, Megan Heist, along with her brother and father, said, quote,
"No way. There is no chance in hell that we will ever meet with that woman."
Lee Sr., Brenda's ex-husband, said that he was working on forgiveness, but he wasn't ready to see her just yet after everything that she's put them through. The children called her selfish and said that she didn't deserve to hear their voices or see them ever again. Nothing warranted what she had done to them. Their anger was palpable. Morgan Heist told CNN that she regrets shedding a single tear over her mother, which she did an awful lot of, especially on her birthdays, at Christmas, and at important family anniversaries. The children said that they felt so betrayed by the person that they trusted most in the world. She was the best mother growing up, they continued. They couldn't understand why she would do this to them. She stayed away for 11 years, gone without a trace. Any reunion for them was shelved before it was even considered. As for legal consequences, technically Brenda didn't break any laws, as she had no intention of defrauding anyone, and she didn't profit from her disappearance. But in June of 2013, a Florida judge sentenced her to a year in prison for violating her parole after stealing the driver's license. At the time of her release, she gave an interview with Dr. Phil, where he asked how and why she did this to her family. She said, well, actually, here's the clip for you to listen to yourselves.
Did you ever think, when you were living at home with two children and a husband and a car and a yard and a house, that you would become a homeless person?
No, I've never even been around homeless people. Maybe seen them on the street sometimes, but I've never been around homeless people at all. Never knew anything about it. That's why I had my own problems believing what I was doing, but I just kept saying to myself, they're better off without me.
When did you stop crying and start living?
I don't know. I don't know that I've ever stopped crying and started living, to be honest with you.
Brenda Heist ended up getting released from prison after 6 months. In November 2013, the day after her 54th birthday, in fact. Following her release, she moved in with her mother in Texas and started counseling. Her counselor said that she had attachment issues and lacked coping skills. Brenda wrote her children a letter after her release, but she didn't ask or expect them to see her. The letter has never been made public. Since her release, both the Heist family and Brenda have kept a low profile, and neither parties have spoken publicly about what they went through. It's unknown if Brenda has seen her children in the 12 years since she reappeared. Both Lee Jr. and Morgan grew up to be well-adjusted adults without her, and they made it very clear there would not be a heartfelt reunion, no hugs or tears. But they did want to know, albeit at a distance, why. Cindy and Lee Sr. are still married, and the children remain close to both of them. They consider Cindy their mother now. Both children also have families and careers of their own. A missing persons case where an adult chooses to leave their family is extremely rare. Less than 5% of missing persons cases are voluntary disappearances. The statistic is even less for a mother, at around 0.5%. Critics and commentators seem to agree that there's clearly mental illness issues with Brenda. Attachment issues and lacking coping skills are not illnesses, however, merely dysfunctional personality traits. When Detective Schofield first got down to Key Largo, he said she seemed mentally fine. They talked for hours. She was in good spirits and didn't appear to have any issues or lasting problems from drug abuse. For clarity, her drug of choice was marijuana, not anything hard or dependence-inducing. Did Lee have to pay back the life insurance? Well, there was going to be some lawsuits regarding it, yes. The last article about it was from 2013, but it said Lee Sr. can likely keep the payout, but the life insurance company would sue Brenda to pay it back, plus interest. Although all attorneys from all sides told the BBC and CNN that as Brenda has no money, the case would likely be dropped. Brenda's mother passed away a couple of years ago in 2017, and it's not known where Brenda is currently living. Online speculation seems to hint that she took over ownership of her mother's house in Texas and got a job close by. Thank you everyone for listening tonight to this strange tale. If you haven't already, please head over to patreon.com/deadsouls and join us, where you can get access to more episodes, research material, and articles. It's just $2 a month, so less than the price of a cup of coffee. Thank you to everyone who's already joined. We appreciate you more than you know. Until next time, good night, everyone.